From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. My guest, W. Kamau Bell, had one of the most mellifluous and controversial album titles of all time, Face Full of Flour. It's not what you think it is. It probably is, if you're a black person, exactly what you think it is. He also has a terrific show, Ending Racism in About an Hour, the W. Kamau Bell Curve. You should know the best podcast in the world of podcasts, and with my favorite title, The Field Negro Guide to Art and Culture. He's also now starring in a show on FX, Totally Biased, with W. Kamau Bell. I'd like to talk to you, Kamau, but we're out of time. You do too much stuff.
You know, I don't know if you know this. I'm not famous, so I like to keep a lot of pots on the fire.
Well, welcome here. As a friend of mine likes to say, I like to keep a lot of irons in the freezer, you know? But one of the things I like about you as a stand-up is that, first of all, being a black man living in San Francisco, that alone gives you reams of material, does it not?
Absolutely. I mean, I wouldn't be the stand-up I am right now if I hadn't lived in San Francisco for 15 years and walked out every day. I'm like, where are the black people? And how come nobody else cares? And how come every time I see black people in San Francisco, they're not smiling? You know.
Talk about the Face Full of Flour, where the title comes from, because that's a really funny bit.
The Face Full of Flour title was recorded in 2009, so Brock was still fresh on the scene. And it was just my frustration with Brock about the fact that he just seemed too smooth all the time. And I felt like that was opening him up to criticism. The whole idea for that joke was that, you know, even if it's easy to be president for you, even if you are LeBron, at least act like it's hard. You know, because you're the first black president, you have to make it look like it's difficult, even if it is easy. You got to be Patrick Ewing on the Knicks, sweat through your jersey sometimes. You know, that's what. The thing that I love about that, I compared to, like, it's like that Rice Krispie commercials from the 80s.
The Rice Krispie treats commercial.
Yeah, Rice Krispie. Where the family wants Rice Krispie treats, the mom makes Rice Krispie treats, and she realizes how easy it is to make Rice Krispie treats, and she realizes, man, my family knows this. They're going to be bugging me all the time for Rice Krispie treats. So what does she do? She throws some flour on her face. So that when her family sees her, they know that she worked hard and that it put in effort. And her family was excited and praised her, even though we all know there's no flour in Rice Krispie treats. So Barack, throw some flour on your face.
Because there's a few bits on the album that almost set up your Barack is the black president that was on the second episode. You touch a little bit on the Glenn Beck is evil piece and a bit on it in the interracial mating piece. I mean, but all these, I mean, and that's why I've used the phrase, he is the black president. And yeah. That's been kind of bubbling up for you for a while, has it not?
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the great things about having the show Totally Biased is that I get to say things in a public way that I've been sort of fomenting for a while. You know, I feel like I'm really able to sort of, like, I was really proud of that black president piece because I felt like I've been sort of saying that in different ways, but with the pressure of TV and weekly television, it was like, well, now I'm going to say it as clearly as I can in 5 minutes.
It was funny, then, that we should say this about the show versus your, and I don't want to call it stand-up, because it really feels like more of a series of essays to me than classic stand-up. I mean, you build, there's kind of a beginning, a middle, and end to each piece, but it's like, to me, it feels like it's something you could do as a book almost.
Well, you know, I think stand-up comedy was just the clearest, easiest way for me to express the ideas in my head. Like you said, I have a lot of other projects, but for me, when people laugh at something, I know that I'm getting the point across. Whether they agree with me or not, I at least know that they understand that I'm making the point I'm trying to make. So, you know, my favorite thing about stand-up albums is, like, when you look on the back of somebody's stand-up album and it says, like, The War, 18 minutes. Like, that's my favorite when it's like that's not jokes. That's a manifesto, you know. And, you know, I love all stand-up comedy, but, like, whenever you see a stand-up comic album and it's, like, got 50 tracks on it, I'm like, that's not. I want somebody to really investigate some things, you know, and that's, you know, Lenny Bruce, that's Bill Hicks, Chris Rock, you know, where it's like, you look in the back, some of the tracks are 10 minutes long.
Well, my guess, when he talked about The War, clearly wasn't talking about the button-down mind of Bob Newhart. It's W. Kamau Bell. He's the star of the new show on FX, Totally Biased with W. Kamau Bell. This is a treatment which you can hear at KCRW.com. But one of the things that's really interesting about watching the show as compared to the stand-up is that it's really boiled down stuff, because what I love about watching you do stand-up is you do a kind of mock outrage about being black, but it's ironic outrage, because the 21st century, you really can't, unless you live in San Francisco, you really can't be angry about being black anymore. So I like that. But it's now on the TV show, it's more sort of submerged rather than being being stated. I mean, it comes out in different ways. And that Barack is a black president was a really great manifestation of that outrage of yours.
Yeah, and I mean, I think I feel about the thing about Barack being the black president. I would like Barack to see that and be like, yeah, I get it. Like, I'm not trying to indict him in the way.
On the Faithful Flower, you talk about the Skip Gates incident.
Yes.
And when he retracted his, like, because everybody in the world, even white people, of course, white cop came to Skip Gates' house and asked him for ID.
Yes. I mean, that's probably one of the favorite things that I ever wrote in a stand-up piece, and I wish I could still do it. But, you know, something, that's why you write topically, you have to move on. Yeah, that was me sort of, I feel like I'm having this dialogue with Barack, he's just not answering.
That's the way it is with every relationship at the beginning. One person always has all the power. But the Field Negro Guide to Art and Culture is, I've sent so many of my friends links, and I was telling you someone when I met you, to the two-part, it should be like a whole series on Cat Williams and his astonishing sort of narcissism and delusion, and pimped out delusion, I guess we should say, the best way to put it, about Latinos in Arizona.
I mean, and the thing that I think is so amazing about that is that I think Cat Williams is a great performer. And I mean, that, you know, if he had been not as good a performer, that would have been a disaster. I mean, it was already sort of like, it was just this strange thing to watch and to see the YouTube clip. But the fact is he holds it together in a way that, I mean, we never had to see Cat Williams' apology tour like we had to see Tracy Morgan's apology tour. You know, we've seen other comedians go on the apology tour. We haven't seen Cat Williams do that, you know.
But it's funny, though, because you said in a few places, and clearly The Daily Show is as much kind of a template for what you do as anything else.
No, I mean, I think that Jon Stewart is certainly, he created a format and really perfected format. I think Jon Stewart's a genius. And without that format out there, I don't know that there would have been, I don't know that I would have been, we would have been able to see on our show how to do it, you know? But I think we're certainly taking a step away from that format. Like, we're not a parody of the news. We're a response to the news. And, you know, and I think there's room for all of us out here. I think that, you know, for a long time it's been Stewart and Colbert and Maher, and I feel like I think I have a different perspective from those guys.
Why, whatever do you mean?
to the radio listeners, I'm black.
Well, what does that make me? Oh, my God, it's The Treatment. Or BET is just now becoming known under the airways. My guest is W. Kamau Bell, the star of Totally Biased on FX. You can also hear the show at kcrw.com. But one of the things that I think is really proving where your skills lie, and I think an area must have surprised you a little bit on Totally Biased, is the interviews. I mean, it must have helped having Chris Rock be on the first show, but your ease with subsequent guests, did you just feel like it got easier right away doing interviews? Or,
you know, I think it's funny. The hardest interview was probably the Rock interview, because we've been hanging out for the last 3 days putting the show together. And so then to sit down and do an interview was sort of like, I just talked to you 5 minutes ago and you told me to fix that line in that joke I did. You know, like, I mean, so it's like, that was probably, but he knows how to do interviews, so he really sort of, I felt like in that interview, he was Michael Jordan, I was John Paxson. You know, like, I felt like I was just waiting for an open shot. But, like, with Rachel Maddow, like, again, it's this thing where we've gotten people that I actually want to have conversations with. And so that's made it really easy. Like, with Rachel Maddow, it's like, I'd done that interview in my head a million times. And she was so open. And Rachel Maddow is everything you want her to be. And she's so open and giving that it felt like we were just talking. And we could have talked for an hour.
A big part of it, too, is that when she was there and Alex Wang, you can see their physical postures change. I mean, because you don't quite realize how they're basically sort of like, you know, bendy straws pushed in one position until they sit down.
Yeah.
And both of them have their hands on their knees. You go, oh, that's what it's like when they just talk to somebody.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think that the show is disarming for people, you know, because I think especially the level to which we're pursuing our mission, and Rachel was backstage watching, and Alex was backstage watching and had watched a lot of clips. And so they come in wanting to play, I think, which is all I want from people, and didn't know that it would happen so quickly. You know, I thought we were going to really have to establish ourselves, but I think we've made some inroads to the people who we thought would like us anyway.
But I think one of the things that you probably got prepared in doing this for is just doing the podcast, because you guide that thing as much as anything else. Like, yeah, Hannibal Buress on, or when you have guests on, and just hearing you on the podcast, you really manage it as much as anything else, because your co-host on most of the shows is Vernon Reid, the legendary guitarist of Living Color, who, it's best to say, he starts off discursive and rapidly becomes digressive.
I feel like he talks like he plays guitar. It's like, you know, he just goes off, and he goes off, and sometimes you're like, where? And then it's like, oh, I feel like with him, it's really like it's a winding road, and I love being able to take myself down it And I think that I know that podcast is who it's for. It's not for everybody. It's who it's for. And that's what I like about it. We don't need it to make money. We don't need it to. It's not either one of our main gigs, but we enjoy doing it. So, you know.
But I just feel like what you picked up in doing the podcast over the past couple of years is an ability to know how to get back to something, because mm-hmm. Vernon can kind of get lost on the whammy bar of conversation, if you will.
The whammy bar of conversation, yes. And I think that that probably has helped in ways that I didn't even realize it was going to help. And also, we have one of the other projects I do is a thing called Laughter Against the Machine, social political stand-up comedy tour. And we have shot a documentary that we're editing now. And we went out and talked to people about – we went to different political hotspots in the country that were political last year.
We went to and stirred some trouble.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yes, went to Arizona, went to Wisconsin.
Went to Detroit. Went to New
Orleans. We went to Dearborn, Michigan. And so we I talked to a lot of people on that, and we would talk to people on the street. And in a weird way, that was preparing me for this too. Like, how do you sit down with somebody – and sort of get to their issue respectfully, but also treat it in a way that you can have fun with it and laugh about it.
Yeah, because there's a difference, because so much comedy, especially that we talk about The Daily Show, is about playing a character and provoking a response. And yours is as much curiosity as anything else. I mean, again, you watch the field pieces that you do on the show, the field Negro, or piece, a Negro doing a piece in the field, I should say.
Yes, yes.
there's a real interviewing technique that you use there.
It's funny. I think that the technique is curiosity and respect. I feel like I don't want to, we just did a piece last night about if gay marriage was mandatory, who would you gay marry? Which is an absurd question, but I really wanted to get answers from people. And so some people you can just ask, and some people you have to sort of tease it out of them a little bit, because I actually want an answer and I want them to know I'm not making fun of them. A lot of times comedy is looked at as making fun of something. And I feel like, no, sometimes it's making fun out of something. And that doesn't mean you have to indict the issue or you have to destroy the respect around it. We're making fun out of this. And at the same time, asking a question that sort of freezes some people's brains, which is fun to see too.
But it's like you're saying that you are genuinely curious about this. And, you can sort of hear the awe in your voice. You ask Vernon the question and he restates the question. He starts to answer it. And before he finishes the answer, but you know what it really is thinking about? what were you thinking about? But you always bring it back to the topic.
Yeah.
I mean, is that something, and that didn't happen in the early shows, but it sort of crystallized pretty fast on the podcast.
I think, the early shows were really, it was like me and Vernon were getting to know each other through the podcast. And, I mean, we knew each other. I mean, I met him on Twitter. We had a couple conversations. He revealed himself to be a huge podcast fan. Vernon listens to more podcasts than anybody I know. He had heard me on podcasts, which is why I think he was excited to come to my show. And he was like, I was like, you should have a podcast. And he was like, yeah, I don't know. But then he got excited about the idea and we started doing it. And so those early podcasts, we had known each other, maybe 2 months longer than the podcast had been going. So we were getting to know each other through the podcast. And then at some point, I became aware of my role in the podcast, which is to guide it back into shore and is to wrap it back around. And sometimes I'm better at it than others. And sometimes I actually don't care. I'm just like, this is an interesting conversation. Let's just go for it. But I do understand that that's my role. Because I, as a listener of podcasts, I want people to get back to the topic sometimes. So I feel like if me and Vernon, if that was our main gig, we would get really great at it. Unfortunately, he's kind of a busy dude.
My guest is kind of busy too. He's W. Kamau Bell. His latest project, in addition to the others, is Totally Biased with Kamau Bell on FX. It's The Treatment. We'll take a break. There's more to come. Stay tuned.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Check out our new YouTube video channel, The Q. KCRW DJs curate themed video playlists and feature artist clips straight from YouTube. Add some visual to your audio. Explore now at kcrw.com/theq.
Welcome back to Not the Field Negro Guide to Art and Culture. It's The Treatment. My guest is the founder of that podcast, but you know him better for a show on FX now, or you should know him better for that. Totally Biased with W. Kamau Bell. It's W. Kamau Bell sitting across from me.
Yes.
I've read so much, and you talked about, your mom's influence, and I wonder what your dad was like, because there's clearly a no-nonsense, let's get this thing done and start it now from your mom. What comes from your dad and in the way you work?
I mean, I feel like two different things are pulling inside of me, I feel like. And those two things are my parents. I always describe my mom as the kind of person who is like, if she sees injustice, she lights a match, throws it in the injustice, and goes the other way. She's like, we just got to burn it down. And my dad is the person who's like, I'm going to go inside the system and figure it out from the inside. And so I really feel that pull inside of me to sometimes to be like sort of to want to burn it down and sometimes to go inside and fix it. And what comes out of that is comedy. And so that's where that comes from. My dad is real. He's real disciplined. And he's real, and when he's real focused on his goal, and he's real, like expects the best of himself. And on some level, because the path that I took was not the path my dad wanted me to take. My dad is like in insurance, and he's been in insurance forever. And he's the guy who, like, started off as a teller at the bank, and then got promoted to the bank manager, and then got feeling that he could make more money in insurance. And so my dad was, like, sort of really preparing me to be a part of that life of, like, you know, I can teach you my insurance trade, and I can do – and I was like, I think I'm going to be a comedian. And as I've said before, that's the hardest laugh I ever got from my dad, was saying I wanted to be a comedian. So I kind of knew that if I did that, I had to really – I was constantly proving to him that it made sense. And there were years it didn't make sense. But finally, at one point, I was like, and there's times I thought about quitting. My friends know this. I would always, because I just felt like I was like a square peg in a round hole or however that goes. And my dad at one point was like, you've put a lot of years into this. You can't quit now.
It's the discipline in your dad.
Yes, yes. He was just like, and I was like, what, I can't quit? But I thought you wanted me to quit. And he was like, no, you're too far in. You're too deep. And we had a conversation about that. He had forgotten he said that to me, but it really was one of the things that kept me in the game, as they say.
Because one of the things that I find myself attracted to in your work is that you have a curiosity about demented institutions. I mean, how do these things still stand? Mm-hmm. And are you aware that that's like this thing that you do? You start from asking a question about how this institution still gets to stand, and people laugh because... But that's not even the bit. You're just sort of like asking a question of yourself to get this thing going.
You know, I feel like it's funny. I feel like the way I write comedy is the stuff that was taught to me in schools about how to write a term paper. You know, like I really feel like that. Like you have to state the thesis, you have to prove the thesis, and you have to wrap up the conclusion. You have to conclude the thesis. And so I feel like things that I learned in high school about how to write a paper is actually what I'm doing on stage when I'm telling these jokes. You know, that it's like I think of jokes all the time that I'm like, but there's nothing there for me. Like, it's not that it's not funny. It's just that there's nothing there for me to sort of explore. And, you know, there's things we leave on the floor all the time. Like, well, they just come out, can't do this. But if I care about it, I know that then my curiosity is going to carry me through to the end of the joke.
But for me, that curiosity about institutions is a really peculiar thing too, because there is a kind of comedy, how best to put this, that's kind of de rigueur for black comedians. You know, at some point it's going to be, it's almost like a friend might just say, I know what black comedians sound like, black, I hate white people, thank you, good night. and what you do is you ask these questions, and again, it's like you're saying about a thesis statement clearly, but also you tend to have a curiosity about these institutions that can't stop themselves from continuing.
Well, and I think that is true. I feel like there's a lot of the comedy comes from, like, logically we know this is true. And I feel like if we're all reasonable people, we sit around talking about it, logically we know this is true. However, the reality of it is that it's not true. And so for me, a lot of the comedy comes from the disconnect of the logic of the thing and the reality of the situation. And, like, my solo show really taught me, like, because the whole show was ending racism in about an hour. And to me, logically, racism doesn't make sense. And yet there's all this proof that it exists. And sometimes people want to pretend like, well, logically it doesn't make sense, so I'm not going to pay attention to the fact that it's happening. And then some people get so caught up in the struggle with it, they don't think about the logic, because I feel like there's logical ways to get out of this if we talk about it. And so the show is about, let's have that discussion. I'm going to pose some questions and see if I can answer them, and then you take these with you. So I think there's always an internal monologue going. And certainly I feel like if I'm going to be on stage, especially doing stand-up, you know, I'm on stage maybe an hour when I'm doing a set. The show is 20 minutes and 15 seconds with commercials. Then let's only talk about the things that actually I care about and have a stake in, because, you know, that's not a lot of time.
It's the treatment, my guest, who apparently plays only half-court basketball when he's doing this TV show as W. Kamau Bell. He's starring in Totally Biased with W. Kamau Bell on FX. It's the treatment, which you can also hear at kcrw.com. But that does what it feels like. It feels like you're only playing, like, one side of the court, you know? So you're just trying to throw up three-pointers.
Yes, like, exactly. I'm trying to throw up bombs. Yeah, yeah. Bombs and, like, three-pointers and dunks. I'm trying to run up the score and humiliate. Yeah, so that's how we feel. I mean, the best compliment people have told us from the show that we've gotten online is that it should be longer. I don't know if it should be longer. I kind of think you leave people wanting more. But I like the fact that when it's over, people are like, wait, but I just sat down. Yeah, come back next week.
Yeah. But knowing the other kind of work you do, there's a real ease in, and I don't mean that you're not comfortable doing a TV show, but you can almost hear you breathe mm-hmm. when you're doing your longer set, mm-hmm. and there's no room for breathing on the TV show.
No, I mean, TV is its own beast, you know? I mean, I feel like there's the way I can be on the podcast, there's the way I can be on stage doing stand-up, there's the way I'm in this interview right now, and TV is like, TV does not like breath. And the thing that I'm learning to have to do, and I'm learning, people are watching me learn every week how to host my own show on TV. I mean, I think about people, you know, I think about like Conan. I think about Conan's first year a lot.
Oh my God.
Because he was also a dude who sort of got, I mean, I've had a lot of performance experience. He didn't have a lot. But, you know, you're like hosting a show, and it's like you have to be present in every moment. And you have to learn how to be present every moment and how to not look like you're like present and how to not look like you're thinking about being present in every moment.
What's it like to do that and then go back and do your act, your hour-long act? Is it tougher now to adjust to doing a shorter version of what you did?
You know what? I haven't done my hour-long act since we started production.
You haven't had time.
I haven't had time. And also, that was one of the big pieces of advice Chris Rock gave me. He said, don't do gigs during the production.
Really?
Yeah, because he said, put it all into the show. If you start to do gigs, you're going to be thinking about the gigs. You're going to be thinking about your act. You're going to be like, you're going to be saving jokes from the show to put in your act, because every comic loves their act more than they love anything else.
Are you that guy too? Do you love the act more than the show?
I mean, I can't wait to get back to stand up. I hope we get extended, but you know, but there's a side of stand up that it's like, it's just you against the people. And also, I think I'm going to be better as a stand up because of the show, because I think I'm going to be sharper than I was before. Because this is like being in the gym every day, you know, it's really, so I feel like when I hit the stage for stand-up, I'm looking forward to it. I also think I'm probably going to be more personal, because I will have spent a lot of time talking about the ills of the world, and I feel like I'm not spending a lot of time talking about myself right now, and I feel like I'm probably going to turn it inward a little bit.
The thing you're listening to right now is The Treatment, which you can also hear at kcrw.com. The person you're listening to is W. Kamau Bell, the star of Totally Biased with W. Kamau Bell on FX. I just like saying that. I mean, just
yes.
I like the feel of that.
I like saying it too. I like doing it. I like being on it. I think, you know, even the name Totally Biased, every time I say it, it makes me laugh.
Yeah, where'd the name come from? Tell me.
I hear musicians talk about this, like naming things is hard. It's really complicated. And the thing that I know, I wanted the name to resonate in a way that gave people an opinion, or gave people sort of could already create the image of what it was before they saw it. So we went through a lot of crappy names, and we just, you know, names that are just sort of devoid of any meaning, because you're just like trying to come up with a name. And then at one point, me, Chuck Sklar, who's the head writer and executive producer, who's worked with Chris for years, and Chris, I was like, we need to get on the phone and just hammer it out in a half hour. And that's what we did. And I think Chris says, my memory said, I like biased. I was like, that's not enough. You need like totally biased. And then we do that thing that you do, totally biased, totally biased. And then it was like, that's the name. We're done. Because the show has a political bent, but also because I feel like there's things you're not going to talk me out of, you know. So no matter how much evidence to the contrary, I'm not going to back down from, like, I think we're all going to be okay if gay people can get married. No, I know we're all going to be okay if gay people can get married, and there's no way you're going to talk me out of that. So.
No, we'll be okay when gay people can get married at a Chick-fil-A.
Yes.
But I think you have a feel for titles, because, you know, the podcast title and the album titles and, you know, Laughter Against the Machine, titles, do they come easy to you?
Sometimes they come easy, but I'll say this, they're of the utmost importance to me. A friend of mine who produced my solo show named Bruce Packman, who's from San Francisco, and he said titles are important, and a lot of times people fall in love with the first title they think of, and that's hardly ever the best title.
Really?
And he said sometimes titles don't come from you, they come from your friend. Ask your friends for titles, like sort of crowdsource the title. Bruce says he hates things that are named Confessions of a... because so many things are named Confessions of a... And, you know, at some point it's like people think that's the best one because they've heard that title before. Like, no, you want to find a new title.
Because you hear, I mean, how long did it take to do the W. Kamau Bell Curve? Was that a pretty quick...
I had one other title, a working title that I thought I liked. And then at some point, it's like it just hit me. Wait, my name's Bell. The Bell Curve is that book that said that racism, that black people couldn't learn. Wait a minute, the Bell Curve! Like, you know, just sort of like it's that thing where you suddenly start, I'm an idiot. Why didn't I think of that sooner?
Because I thought that, when I heard that, I just thought, he's been waiting to do this all his life. That's been sitting in a wallet next to the condom. Yeah. He's been waiting to put that piece of paper and pop, there you go.
No, because earlier in my career, and I've talked about this before too, I would steer away from talking about racism
because
I felt like crowds didn't want to hear it. And so when I finally fully embraced it in 2007 and said, I'm just going to rent theaters and do it myself and make a poster and get a title, that's when it sort of like was given to me from wherever the titles come from. And, you know, and then the subtitle, Ending Racism in About an Hour, was just like, I knew nobody knew who I was. I knew that title would make people start to go, wait a minute, what is, they would start to have curiosity from the title. And that's important to me, is that you get people sort of going from the title.
Because one of the things that I like about San Francisco crowds when you're dealing with them is you can tell they think, oh, I don't want to hear about racism. We're past that. Mm-hmm. And you have to remind them. No, you're not. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really a big part. And that's sort of, I think having that kind of crucible to form the act in San Francisco enables you to take it out. Because people, I think, are more honest about race outside of San Francisco than they are in San Francisco.
Absolutely. I think that's true. San Francisco crowds sometimes are tough nuts to crack. But that's why with the show, I did the thing where if you brought a friend of a different race, you got in 2-for-1. Because I knew that would immediately change the makeup of the room, and it did. And so that when I talked about racism, because San Francisco is a very white city, if I just said show about racism, it would get white people would show up. If I'm saying bring a friend of a different race, get in 2-for-1, it immediately starts the conversation in your head. Why don't I have a friend of a different race? I should bring a friend of – I got to find – is Jamal out of town? You know, and so that's what it did, and it made the audiences much more receptive.
Because you were saying a bit ago about being able to get back to the personal in your act when you hit the stage again. Do you think there'll be a point you can start to bring the personal into totally biased? I mean, because so much of it is, in fact, coming from you anyway. Will it help you to bring personal stuff into it, or do you want to keep that part of your life separate for the stand-up?
No, I think if totally biased is to continue past 6 episodes and to become a major part of my life in the way I want it to, then I think it becomes natural that it becomes more personal. And I think that is what sort of separates us from other shows. It's just that you know, in the pilot, I showed a picture of my daughter, and you know, I've talked about my wife, and I think that you have to be circumspect about that. You can't just put everything out there, but I do feel like that would be a natural part of it. You know, last night when I was talking to Alex, I said I had a mixed race daughter, which everybody who's followed my career knows.
Alex Wagner.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I said I had a mixed race daughter, and I realized I haven't said this on TV before. Whatever the image people get to me, I want people to know that I'm not hiding from anything. You know, I don't want to be like, he's got a white wife, that black guy. Yeah, he told us that already. It's on his CDs. So I just wanted to, you know, I knew when I said that last night, like that was part of the thing of like sort of sending up a flare.
Well, speaking of setting up a flare, I got to send up the goodbye flare. We're out of time. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you for having me, Elvis. This has been quite an honor. I appreciate it.
No, you'll think better once you hear the show. My guest is W. Kamau Bell. He's the star of Totally Biased on FX. Our recording engineer at Argo Studios in New York is Paul Ress. The show is mixed by J.C. Swadek. It is edited and produced by Jenny Radulet. I'm a Negro in such a field. It's The Treatment.
Find past episodes of The Treatment at kcrw.com or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Listen to The Treatment on demand on your smartphone with KCRW's apps. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.